Hi, Darren. Welcome to this program. It's called Down by the River. We're here in Nowra, and you're going to be playing at El Horses as part of your national tour. So you're going to be here on the 30th of November, but you're beginning the tour in Blackheath on the 19th. So you're all kind of prepared and ready for that.
Yeah, played the first show in Sydney a week ago. So yeah,
Okay.
I've learned all the compositions. That's the trickiest thing when you just do instrumental guitar, to be able to play them and get your chops up, as they say, which just means to practice and not make mistakes and remember all the compositions. So yeah, I'll have to go through it again. It's you have to do it every 3 days, especially I'm doing like 40 songs, so they kind of sometimes if you start playing do a remix, it's kind of a bit weird.
Yeah, I'm a failed guitarist myself, actually, but not very good. But your picking style is very intricate. What are the influences behind that?
Yeah, I guess kind of I break them into two sections. Like the British section is Burt Jansch, John Renbourn, Nick Drake was what I first heard when I was a kid, and I was like, oh yeah, wow, what's that? And then on the American side, I've got John Fahey and Leo Kottke. They're older kind of guys. Leo's still alive, he still plays, he's in his 80s, but John's passed away. And then there was a second wave of those guys. There's a guy called Jack Rose, who's passed away as well, but he died quite early. But so yeah, it's very distinct, the British and the Americans, their styles of guitar. But yeah, so I try to do an Australian, so I take little bits, but yeah, I try to do my own thing.
Yeah, that's why I really enjoyed that Kuta Mundra video because it's got that very. I mean, obviously I'm from England, but like, if you're going to describe Australia, if you played your music with that footage, you just get what Australian little towns are about, really. But I know the English references. I'm a big Nick Drake fan. I'm reading a biography about him at the moment, actually. But and John Renbourn and Bert Jansch. I know a little bit of their music. But the American stuff I'm not familiar with. So are those guys someone like John Renbourn or what would have been influenced by? Like, were they around at the same time or were they kind of contemporaries?
No, I don't think. The American and British stuff's so different. I mean,
It's very different.
the American stuff is like more steeped in, like Mississippi John Hurt and stuff like that, like American blues, and even like Elizabeth Cotton, who's she was a guitarist and she had a unique style. She used to play the guitar with her left hand, but the strings tuned put on the wrong way around. Well, so the thick string would be down the bottom and the top string.
So she's turned it over.
Yeah, and she just taught herself, and she was an older woman, and yeah, and she just yeah, just I think the American stuff's a bit different.
Is that more like the country blues style? Is that what it's like?
Yeah, I'd say more like that, but yeah, they have this John Fahey hat. They said he was American primitive, and you can't really say that now with the current political way. People are very hyper aware, and that saying kind of rubs people up the wrong way. But he was saying the primitive was self-taught, like the primitive painters. That was his shtick. But yeah, he's there minimal, but then it kind of goes into Leo Kottke, who's just a crazy guitarist. Yeah, the American stuff, it's a lot more, it's got more of a swing too, I'd say. It's on the beat or off the beat. Yeah, like the old blues stuff, like a stomping their feet and then boom bump. Bump, boom, bump, boom, bump, and they're playing that, and then they pick out these melodies or play with a blues scale where the English stuff is way more stately, a bit more different time signatures, especially stuff like Nick Drake. It's like you listen to some of his stuff and you're like, how would you even have made that up? It's still, even to this day, it's still so.
too rambled. But funny character. But yeah, he left some great music to me.
Yeah, just quickly, have you heard his mother's album?
No, I haven't. I've heard of some of his piano demos, and apparently they sound like his mum, but I haven't heard his mum.
Yeah, my partner found a Molly Drake record in this op shop, and it was like worth so much money.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And, that's amazing.
Molly Drake. Yeah, it's so good. And she recorded it because I think you're leaving the part as a story out of about Nick Drake that he was absolutely loaded. And he was, like a part of the tea dynasty, the British tea dynasty, I think he was. And so the mother had. Back in the day, like, she had a parlor piano, but she is phenomenal. Like, you listen to her play and her sing, and it's just like she was so good. Because, well, a lot of the guitar, that it's strange, but a lot of the guitar in the early days was that's why they're called parlor guitars, and that's what all these country blues guys play. But it's originally the kind of Celtic and medieval sounds was on the smaller guitar, but they were played by women in parlors. So Molly Drake she plays this parlor music, but on a piano. But that's where this style of music that I play, that everybody plays, it was from, like, ladies. Yeah. In parlors playing this thing. So it's quite weird. And everyone's like, hey, rock and roll, whatever. It's like, no, not really.
It comes from the parlor. We used to have a back room in our house. My mum used to call it the parlor. But the what I can add to that is Molly Drake. So yeah, as you said, they were very well to do. And her husband bought her one of the first tape recording machines that came into Britain. I think tape machines go back to the Germans after the war. The Americans got their hand on it and started using it. And yeah, he bought her this big tape machine, so that's why she was able to. They're probably demos. Like, she did. I don't think she cut an album. You're making albums today. She just would have recorded to herself playing piano. And Nick Drake did a lot of that as well in his early days on the same tape machine. I think that's where his. I know there's some like early demos of his stuff out as well, but. That's mad. You found an album in an op shop. Wow. It's cool. but the music that you're making is instrumental, or, you know, your last few albums you've been doing, going under DC Cross since about 2019. And so when you're putting an album of instrumentals together, what are you thinking? Like, obviously you've got, as you said, like the rhythms you've got going, and you've got the melodies over the top, but you're trying to like paint some picture. It was like, you know, would you think about it that way? Or how do you think about putting those songs together and putting those different pieces of music together?
Yeah, kind of break it down. With every project, I get a new guitar and I get a new tuning.
Really?
And
I get
a new finger picking pattern. And each one I get it more complicated. So this last record, Wizrad, that I've done, it's a different thing. But like the first one, Ecstatic Record, I wrote most of those ideas when I was like in Europe, like visiting people and stuff. And then one was during COVID, so that was like an escapist album. And then the Hotwire, the Lalo one, the Australian escapist pieces for guitar, that was just based on places that I'd gone in Australia. And I wrote that album in Lithgow, which Lithgow's over the Blue Mountains, and it's a bit it's got a reputation for being a bit sketchy kind of, and it still is, but I don't know, I just hired the cheapest motel I could find and stayed there in the winter, and it was snowing, and I just wrote all these ideas and then went back and learned how to play them. But with Wizrad, so that's another tuning that I've developed, and I actually got I've got the best guitar of my life. I've got two brand new guitars, but one was from Mayton, which is an Australian company. Yeah, they gave me the same kind of guitar as like Tommy Emmanuel uses, like really discounted. They saw me play, so here I had this amazing guitar that I'd never really had a good guitar. I just used crappy ones I get off Facebook Marketplace or whatever. So, yeah, that really helped define. I think the guitar and the tuning, and then It all kind of
Gives
comes
them.
together, like yeah, like the first, like I learned this finger picking pattern. I spent 2 months on it, 2 months doing this one pattern, and just really, I had it in my head, but I just couldn't do it. And then when it becomes proficient, then when it comes to write something, you can do it. It's kind of like martial arts, you know. I want to learn martial arts, but you have to learn attack and defense, and then, you know, everything, the whole, understand the whole thing, the picture that you want to present. And then if someone comes and tries to smack you in the gob, then you'll be able to do, put it all together, and it comes out in this kind of instinctual way. So that's how I see it. And each album, I want to be a better guitarist, and I want to do something a bit more complicated. So yeah, that's kind of, but the Wizrad's, in saying that, it's got some just full-on ambient stuff on it. It sounds almost like new agey Chuck Wild, Liquid Minds stuff, and real weird madcap ambient stuff. But yeah, so it's predominantly.
And do you use many effects, like any, like, studio effects or guitar effects or anything like that?
When it comes to the straight guitar playing, no, I don't. It's all maybe a bit of reverb here or there. But then with all the ambient stuff on it, yeah, it's completely, you can't even, there's two ambient tracks on it, New Page and Astral Plane, which you can't even tell, but they are, it's actually just one guitar that I was, because I recorded it all at my house in the studio, and I kind of, yeah, it, by mistake, I bounced this wrong channel or kind of thing. I won't really go into it because it's a bit of a my secret now, but
Okay.
yeah, and it
Which
was
track
just
is
like
that you're talking about? Which track?
it's called, one's called New Page and one's called Astral Travel, which are just the two on the vinyl. They're both bookend of the last track, and like I listened to it, and I was like, oh, did someone send me this as an email? What the hell is this? And then I went, oh no. Nah. And then I, so yeah, but with the guitar, there's no trickery. It's just me playing it.
Have you heard like any John Martin stuff from the 70s? Like he used this,
Echoplex.
Echoplex. Yeah, that was it. Like I don't know if anybody else
Yeah.
has used it or, but like yeah, it's a very distinct sound that he got. I'm not sure what guitar. Did he use an Ovation or something like that? I think maybe. Or
Oh, Jesus, the worst guitars of all time.
are they really? I've never played one.
Oh, they're
But a
made
lot
out
of
of
people
fiberglass.
used to. Oh, they're really. A lot of people used to
They are.
play them in the 80s.
Jimmy Page, Roy Harper. I've seen all the footage of them off their head in the Lakes District. Absolutely terrible. I was actually talking to this on this guitar podcast with this geezer, and he we're just slagging off Ovation for, I don't know,
Really?
at least 30 minutes. Yeah, it's just, they are the worst guitars of all time. But
Wow,
I would
that's
love
really
to get one.
interesting.
But yeah, John Martin, I mean, yeah, he was doing something completely different, and he's an amazing guitarist, like a finger picker as well. And but if you see him like showing off, he could play. He had the skills. But yeah, that thing, and he plays, what is it called? And he plays the Echoplex, and there's all like recorded a lagoon or whatever. Yeah, I was really into John Martin. His voice is just a bit intense for me sometimes. Be very powerful, you know, powerful kind of. Okay, I mean, I spent a lot of time with. I was in a band called Girling, and we would tour around, and we do massive tours with all this equipment, like a vocoder, three keyboards, two guitars, bass, drum kit, a computer, four track, all this stuff. It's so restrictive, you know. I don't know. Like now, if I can just like bounce on a train in Heidelberg and go to France with a guitar and play some shows, I mean, that's what I want to do. It's just completely. I don't know. You put the work in, and then you know, you can
I was
kind of.
gonna ask. I was gonna ask about that. It is such a like a difference that world of being signed to a major label and you know doing those big. I was watching some footage of you at Big Day Out or something like that from early two or from the 90s, I think it is. Where you've
Yeah,
yeah
there's
you've
a.
got your a bit, what's the massive track the big kind of dance track that you did
Dust Me Selector or
Dust Me
Enter Space
Selector.
Capsule.
Dust Me
Yeah.
Selector. Oh my God, that looks great fun though. You got the crowd going. You're bouncing up and down. Like what was that like? Do you look back on those days and go, "Wow, that was awesome," or was it a bit of a blur now?
No, yeah, it was a lot of hard work. I mean, when you're on stage, you just like you don't want to mess up. But in particular, I know what video you're talking about. And we had the Flaming Lips and New Order on side of stage watching us.
Wow, that's pretty intense, isn't it?
Yeah,
Jesus,
yeah, yeah. Not to
because.
mention, so there's all this other stuff with festivals that you don't really like. I remember, yeah, it's all cool, but I mean, like meeting Peter Hook and him being crazy to me is more is a more full on memory than you know me like going Dust Me Selector. I don't really, I don't know. It's all jumbled up in there, but I mean, when you meet Peter Hook and Bernard Sumner, and you're just like. Or you meet Johnny Marr, you're just like, oh God, what? It kind of, I don't know. It's all in there, but it's mixed up.
Did you were they friendly? Did you have good like chat about music and stuff like that, or?
Yeah, well, I did this folk. I'll tell you a cool story. I did this folk duo with my partner, Jess. We're called Jep and Dep, and we it was just a guitar and we were both singing. And we did a lot of good shows. We got a lot of great supports, like we did Courtney Barnett and Lowe and
Oh yeah.
Meryl Wagner and Jessica Pratt. But I guess the biggest one was Johnny Marr. Johnny was doing a tour of Australia and they have a support band and he didn't like them. And they're like, we need a folk, we need something folky. And we got the call and we went in there to the sound check, you know, and there's Johnny Marr and his band playing How Soon Is Now, and it almost collapsed. And then our sound check and Johnny Marr
What
saunters
year was that?
over.
What year was oh sorry. About
Crikey,
2011
would
or
have been
something.
like, no, maybe 2014, maybe, or
Oh yeah, okay.
2012. Yeah, I'm not too sure. There's a picture online with us with Johnny Marr, but so he saunters over. Over and I'm absolutely speechless. And Jess is like, yeah, she's cool with anything, you know. She's like, oh, hey, how you going, Johnny Marr? She's like, oh, how you going? How'd you guys get here? And Jess like, oh, we caught the bus. He's like, oh yeah, I used to catch the bus. And then he's like, oh yeah, you know, Bert, Yanch. How do you say it, Bert?
A bit Yanch, I'd probably say Yanch,
Yeah,
Yanch.
Yanch, yeah. So anyway, I was like, oh yeah, I knew a couple of things, and he's like, blah 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 blah, Bert Yanch, Bert Yanch, Bert Yanch, talking to me for half an hour, like all this stuff I should check out, And then, like, we played the gig and then went home. And of course, all of Bert's stuff's amazing. And then it really influenced what I did. And I was just like, well, that's pretty cool. Johnny Marr telling me.
Wow, yeah, it's changed your
Yeah.
music
So,
bit, yeah.
but
I've read this.
he's one of the coolest. He's probably out of all of them, anyone I've ever met, Johnny Marr is the coolest, is the nicest, no
Yeah.
bullshit kind of dude. Yeah.